Well, as we said, we'll revisit this modern political drama, but first, the one that took place 150 years ago, New Year's Day. We were waiting and listening as for a bolt from the sky. That's how abolitionist and former slave Frederick Douglass recalled January 1st, 1863, the bolt from the sky, President Abraham Lincoln's signature on the Emancipation Proclamation. Douglass was in Boston waiting. In fact, New Year's Eve was called Watch Night. Others like Ralph Waldo Emerson waited as well. Peter Drummy is librarian at the Massachusetts Historical Society.
People believe that news of the signing is going to come, but they're on tenterhooks. But this is a big deal. Thousands of people participating. For the abolitionists who had been outcasts within the sort of social life of Boston going back to the 1830s and 40s, here's vindication.
The signing came on the 1st. Yesterday, at the African American Meeting House in Boston, the Handel and Haydn Society sang the Hallelujah Chorus just as it did 150 years ago during an Emancipation Day concert at Boston Music Hall on New Year's Day. President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in the middle of the Civil War. The Union Army had just seen a terrible defeat at Fredericksburg. The decisive battle at Gettysburg was still months away. So what effect did the Emancipation Proclamation have? Adam Goodhart is an historian at Washington College. His latest book is 1861, The Civil War Awakening. He joins us from the NPR studios in Washington. Adam, welcome back.
Robin, it's great to be back.
And, you know, people who have seen the wonderful Spielberg film Lincoln are probably thinking to themselves, that's right, I'm reminded that the Emancipation Proclamation also came before the 13th Amendment, which made slavery illegal everywhere in the U.S. So remind us, you know, something we should know, it should be etched in our brains, but remind us, what exactly was the Emancipation Proclamation?
It declared that all the slaves in areas that were currently in rebellion against the United States were henceforth and forever free. It was really kind of a temporary measure against slavery, but that said, it was still one of earth-shaking importance.
Well, we remember the scene in the film where there's a discussion about the Emancipation Proclamation, it not being enough. You know, Lincoln needed to push for law. But remind us, it's several paragraphs long. It's a little difficult to understand in modern language. So what was he saying beyond saying that the states that were in rebellion, the slaves within those states would be considered free?
The amazing thing about the Emancipation Proclamation isn't really what it says as much as what it doesn't say. As you say, it's dry, it's plodding, there's no transcendent language here. It's not like the Declaration of Independence or the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. There are no grand statements of purpose. Really, all that it does is it refers back to a preliminary Emancipation Proclamation that Lincoln had made back in September, more or less warning the leaders of the Southern Rebellion that if they didn't come back into the Union, that they were at risk of losing their slaves as of January 1st. And he more or less said in the Emancipation Proclamation of January 1st, 1863, well, I gave you guys warning. I gave you 100 days warning, and I am carrying through on this, and the slaves in the following states and counties are hereby free.
Yeah. And he says further, the executive government of the United States, including the military and naval authority thereof, will recognize and maintain the freedom of such persons and will do no act or acts to repress such persons or any of them in any efforts they may make for their actual freedom.
It's pretty dry stuff, isn't it? And, you know, that's really, I think, part of its brilliance. You know, we're all familiar with the kind of political eloquence that can make routine acts of the federal government seem transcendently important. Well, Abraham Lincoln, I think, had perhaps an even more remarkable kind of political eloquence that could make transformative acts of government seem routine. I mean, this proclamation freeing the slaves almost reads like a revision of the federal postal regulations.
Yes. I love when he's describing areas, Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, except the parishes of St. Bernard, Plaquemines, Jefferson, St. John, St. Charles, St. James, Ascension, Assumption, it goes on and on, St. Mary, St. Martin, Orleans, excluding the city of New Orleans, Mississippi, Alabama. It goes on and lists what? The areas where there was uprising?
It accepted from the proclamation certain areas that were already under federal control. Now, some people have actually argued that that means that no slaves were actually freed But there were federal troops already controlling areas that were not exempted by the proclamation. And so the slaves in those areas were immediately freed. It's hard to count exactly how many, but it was certainly thousands and probably tens of thousands of newly freed people. But the impact of the proclamation, of course, went far beyond those thousands of people freed on January 1st itself.
Yeah, on January 1st, 1863. And we're reminded the 13th Amendment was ratified in 1865, 2 years later. And that did, as we said, make slavery illegal everywhere in the U.S., whereas I'm reading off a list here of the things the Emancipation Proclamation did not do, did not compensate slave owners, did not itself outlaw slavery across the board, did not make ex-slaves called freedmen citizens. So what did it do?
What the Emancipation Proclamation did that everyone realized was just transformational was it turned the Union cause really into the cause of emancipation. And it stated that these slave states are not going to come back into the Union with slavery intact. The old Union that we knew, the Union of Compromise, the Union in which slavery was accommodated and protected under the Constitution, is no longer. In fact, how Lincoln thought of it was that he was saving the Union by removing the cause of the rebellion. He put it to a cabinet member in the summer of 1862, "We must free the slaves or ourselves be subdued." So he entered into this in a way sort of hesitantly and reluctantly, or at least that was the way that it appeared to many observers.
Well, forgive me, just, you know, for things that, again, we probably should have learned in fourth grade history. But didn't everyone know that's what the fighting was over?
For most people at the beginning of the war in 1861, this was not a war to free the slaves by any means. Many people, perhaps most white people, and certainly obviously African Americans in the North, were opposed to slavery, but they also felt that slaveholders needed to be accommodated because that was the only way that the Union could be held together. And they also recognized, as Lincoln himself did, that the federal Constitution explicitly protected slavery. That, in fact, is the reason that Lincoln was so slow to move, as many more radical abolitionists saw it, so slow to move against slavery, and only drafted this proclamation well over a year into the war.
And you remind us Lincoln's thinking was that the North would be much more comfortable with emancipation if it was a necessity of war, hence that legalistic language you talked about. Historian Adam Goodhart on the Emancipation Proclamation signed 150 years ago today. By the way, Boston listeners will link you to events in the area celebrating it. And have more with Adam after a break, here and now. Welcome back. In a few minutes, we'll devote a big chunk of time to the historical day playing out in Washington, but there's a good chance we won't be talking about that 150 years from now, the way we are talking today about the Emancipation Proclamation, signed by President Lincoln during the Civil War in 1863. There was great anticipation. Abolitionists like Frederick Douglass gathered in Boston's black churches. Beverly Morgan Welch of the Museum of African American History here in Boston tells what happened when word reached them.
They throw their hats in the air. They sing and shout with jubilee. And as Douglass says, it is the first time he knows what joy truly is.
As we've been hearing from historian Adam Goodhart, the Emancipation Proclamation only freed blacks in the rebel states that had seceded. But as we saw in the movie Lincoln, it paved the way for the 13th Amendment, which abolished all slavery 2 years later in 1865. But Adam, the Emancipation Proclamation also did something else. It brought black troops into the Union military effort.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Emancipation Proclamation stipulated that black men would be enlisted into the Union Army and the Union Navy. And in fact, it did end up generating nearly 200,000 African-American troops who would play a major, major role in the final 2 years of successfully winning the war for the Union. But in terms of a military measure, the Emancipation Proclamation did something else, which was it struck at the very economic and social cornerstone of the Confederate government. And increasingly, Northerners had recognized that if you wanted to strike a devastating blow at the foundations of the rebel government, you could do it by striking a blow at slavery itself. And this was something that more and more people in the North, white Northerners, were ready to do in the latter days of 1862. Now, this was a time when the war had dragged on for much longer than anyone in the South or the North had expected it to last. It was reaching a point where scarcely any American family or community was untouched by the toll of human lives strained on the battlefields. People across the North were ready to win this war by any means, and the proclamation offered a way of doing that and a way of doing it without direct bloodshed for the Union troops.
Yeah. Could there have been a 13th Amendment which was so hard fought for and traded for in so many ways? I mean, you know, Lincoln had to literally buy votes for it. Could it have happened without the Emancipation Proclamation paving the way?
No, I don't think it ever could have. You know, the abolitionists were always complaining. William Lloyd Garrison complained that the president could do nothing for freedom except by circumlocution and delay. When you look at the history of emancipation during the war, it seems as if the federal government was sort of backing in very, very hesitantly and going from the initial measures to help slaves who came into the Union lines to then giving more assistance and more liberation to those slaves, and then the Emancipation Proclamation, and then finally the 13th Amendment. I think that if universal freedom had been proclaimed early in the war, it would have probably split in half the already deeply fractured Northern public and quite possibly actually ended the struggle to save the Union almost before it had begun.
How was the Emancipation Proclamation received outside of the U.S.? You know, what impact did it have? Was it as, you know, big a moment as it was inside? And tell us more about how it was received inside.
Well, this was enormous news across the world, and in fact, Lincoln had calculated on its being so. There was still some question at this moment as to whether Great Britain and France were going to step in and support the Confederate cause, or at least recognize the Confederate government, which might have been a fatal blow to the Union effort. But with the Emancipation Proclamation placed, as Frederick Douglass said, he said it placed the North on the side of justice and civilization and the rebels on the side of robbery and barbarism in the eyes of all the world. Suddenly, if you were going to stand with the Confederate government, you would seem to be taking the side of slavery. You would be taking the side of slavery. And this was especially hard because Britain and France had already abolished slavery. France prided itself on having been the first of the great European powers to abolish slavery during the French Revolution, and Britain had abolished slavery several decades earlier, and Queen Victoria and her late husband Prince Albert had themselves been supporters of the anti-slavery movement. So it would have been very, very hard for the governments of those countries to rally their own citizens behind a war that continued slavery in America.
And just to just touch a little bit on how this was received by African Americans and their abolitionist supporters. We talked about the occasion of the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, which, as you said, they anticipated because Lincoln announced he was going to do it 100 days before, and here it's going to happen. And the people at the Museum of African American History remind us that here in Boston, you had people like Frederick Douglass and William Lloyd Garrison at the Tremont Temple. You had people like Ralph Waldo Emerson, John Greenleaf Whittier, and Harriet Beecher Stowe at the Music Hall. Everybody gathered for this historic event.
Well, in some of these grand celebrations in New York and Boston, there were speeches, there were prayers, there was ringing of bells and singing of hymns. But to me, what's even more moving are the descriptions of how people were reacting in the South, namely the African Americans who saw this as the coming of freedom. There's one description of in Port Royal, South Carolina, an area that had been occupied by Union troops some months earlier, that the general there had the proclamation read to the slaves. The Union general had the proclamation read to the slaves. And after he had read this, the voice of an elderly male slave began to sing, "My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing." And the voices of other slaves joined in. And it was an incredible moment because not only were they saying that they were free, they were saying for the first time, "This America is our country, too."
Quite something. Adam Goodhart, historian. His latest book is 1861, The Civil War Awakening. Adam, thanks as always.
Robin, great to join you. Land,
Aretha Franklin. Well, the latest news and a look at the latest and the current drama in Washington, that's all coming up here and now.